up, everyone? Welcome to the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, here at the Inquirer Studios with our lovely producers, Sam Green and Phil Didion, here to break down week two. We've moved on from the Bengals week one loss from the Cleveland Browns. So we are here to talk about the Baltimore Ravens. And I have a special guest for you, someone I hope that you really enjoy the conversation as much as I did. And that is with Mike Gennetti of SpotTrack.com. He is an expert on contracts, and his website is the go-to if you're looking for contract details of any professional athlete. They cover all sports, but I spend a ton of time on that website when I'm looking up to see what players are going to be making year over year, what their contract really looks like. So there was no one else I wanted to have on this podcast since Joe Burrow's contract details were released recently. Of course, he signed that big monster deal last week, but you're not really able to gather enough information without the details. So the details were finally released, and Mike was kind enough to join me on today's episode to break it all down for you, and he provided some great insight. So I will get to that conversation in a little bit, but let's talk a little bit about this week's matchup. It is the Bengals' home opener. Of course, a big crowd is expected. It's supposed to be great weather. The vibes are gonna be high, but we'll see how that turns out for the Bengals, because week one was not what you would expect from that Cincinnati Bengals team. And I am headed over to the locker room to hear from Zach Taylor, Joe Burrow, and the rest of the players this week. But typically Wednesday, they've moved on from what took place last Sunday. They're focused on their game plan for the Ravens. So let's talk a little bit about this Baltimore Ravens team, a team that the Bengals are very familiar with. They faced the Ravens twice a year. They faced them three times last year, having played them in the wild card round. Of course, a game that all Bengals fans can remember, the fumble in the jungle, of course, taking place right back there with Sam Hubbard having an iconic play. The Ravens gave the Bengals a handful in that game, but the Bengals were able to come out. But this is typically a matchup where they play great in one game, and then there's times where the Bengals are a really hard matchup for the Ravens, and vice versa. And it's that Ravens defense that has provided some issues for the Bengals. I remember Joe Burrow was saying that their scheme and their defensive coordinator makes it really challenging, and they're different than the Browns. They're not going to be that vaunted pass rush, just ridiculous defensive front that you're going to have to worry about. They have great linebackers in the middle. Typically, they have a very good secondary. I know that they're dealing with some injuries there, so it might not be as strong as years past, but they're a very different team than the Cleveland team, but they're still a really solid unit. So we'll see what Zach Taylor has in store for them. But just a couple of quick highlights on this specific matchup. Let's start with the Ravens' injuries. They won against the Houston Texans in week one, but unfortunately they had some injuries on their side. One significant one was to running back J.K. Dobbins. He tore his Achilles and he's going to be out for the season. So no J.K. Dobbins for the Ravens, which is probably a good thing because he created some problems for the Bengals last time they faced him. So they will not be having Dobbins, who's an Ohio State product. So any Ohio State fans listening, of course, know all about what J.K. Dobbins can do. Also, a couple of injuries for them are Ronnie Stanley, a left tackle there that they view as a really good player, but he's just had terrible injury luck. He suffered an injury, and it sounds like he's going to be week to week, and it doesn't sound likely that he's going to play. And also, their center, Tyler Linderbaum, is also dealing with an injury. He has an ankle injury, and it's not expected that he plays as well, which could be good news for the Bengals' defensive front because they could really try and get after Lamar Jackson with Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, and DJ Reader, and co. We will get an update from Zach Taylor today as far as if Joseph Osai could potentially make his return to the field this weekend, but we won't know until later on this week. Osai did not practice last week and is dealing with a high ankle sprain. When I had a chance to talk to him a couple weeks back, he said the doctors told him it's potentially a 4-week injury, but they're going to check in with him after 2 weeks. So that would be about this week. So he didn't know at the time, really when he was going to be back. But Zach Taylor said he's day to day and is making great progress. So we will see. But sounds like the Bengals defense could potentially get after the Ravens offensive line and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson, a couple of quick notes here. Bengals fans are familiar with all that he can do in the run game and in the pass game. But this year's a little bit different for Jackson because he's playing under a new offensive coordinator, and that is Todd Monken. Todd Monken came to the Ravens after being the offensive coordinator for the University of Georgia Bulldogs for the last couple of years, done a great job down there. He was in Cleveland before, so familiar with the NFL style, but people are expecting the Ravens to really be airing it out more under Monken, and the first week is indicative of it. Jackson was okay. He didn't look great, to be honest, but they were highlighted by the play of rookie wide receiver Zay Flowers. For the last couple of years, it seems like the Ravens have not really been able to figure out that wide receiver position. Mark Andrews has been the receiving option, the guy. And this year, Andrews didn't play last week. It's important to note that it's going to be Zay Flowers. He had 78 receiving yards on 9 receptions and 10 targets. The next closest target share to him was Odell Beckham, who is, of course, now on the Ravens as well. So look for Rashad Bateman, Odell Beckham, Zay Flowers, and Mark Andrews, if he plays this week, to be Lamar's big options passing the ball. So we will see what that Ravens offense looks like. You're not really able to tell right now what the Bengals can expect because it's just a small sample size of what that Monken offense looks like with Jackson at the helm. But other than that, I expect this to be a tough AFC North battle, and the Bengals will be looking to get their first win of this season. They're really going to try and write that first week off and make sure that they're right on track in the division where they want to be. And of course, you know, it didn't go the way they wanted to, but it is the first week. Joe Burrow wasn't able to practice as much as he would have hoped, and I think that showed, plus the rain. So just throw week one out. This is the week to really focus and see where this Bengals team is. All right, here is now my conversation with Mike Jannetty of SpotTrack.com. I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I'm super excited to bring this next guest on. With big news last week that Joe Burrow signed his massive contract, there was no one else that I wanted to have on than Mike Jannetty, who is the co-founder of SpotTrack. And if you don't know what SpotTrack is, if you're looking for any information on NFL quarterbacks, NFL players, anything you want to know about contracts, this is where you want to go. It does a breakdown of players' individual contracts, line by line, all the important stuff that you want to know. Mike, before I break down a little bit of what we're going to talk about, is it just NFL or do you guys do other sports too?
No. We've been adding sports every single year now for a whole bunch of years. It's everything from the major 4 sports in America to English soccer to F1 racing to a bunch of the women's sports now we've started to add. So we're trying to make it the one-stop shop for all the sports financials in the world here.
Well, awesome. And I guess I probably only think of it in the lens because my world is just NFL all the time. So that's where I'm only visiting. But yeah, if you're curious about like he just said, any other sports contracts, this is where you want to go. It's super reliable. Everything you want to know about these contracts, that's where you want to go. So I wanted to bring you on and get your thoughts on Joe Burrow's contract details. He signed his deal last Saturday before leaving to go play the Cleveland Browns. And you can make a lot of opinions about the contract, the initial numbers, but really where you're able to gain the most information is a couple days later when the details are released. And that's what just happened a couple days ago. And you wrote a story basically summarizing what you need to know about the contract. So why don't you kick things off with me and just give me a little bit of your overview of what stood out to you about this contract?
Yeah, that's a great way to reference it, by the way. There's a lot of funny money built into NFL contracts. It's not like a baseball deal where you can kind of, you know, what you see is what you get. However, with that said, these quarterback contracts are getting closer and closer to that, right? You know, the $275 million reported for Joe Burrow, it's real. You know, he's going to make upwards of $220 million of that really without doing too much. So we're getting closer to that, you know, real deal, nearly fully guaranteed contracts. You know, my initial thought was this the kind of deal Joe Burrow was looking to sign with this franchise? Because it's not something the Cincinnati Bengals have done historically ever in any regard with any position. So the back and forth of would he take a Tom Brady approach and sort of limp into this thing was certainly answered immediately with the structure of this contract, with the guaranteed process in this contract. And the piece that I put together really starts to tell that story of You know, he's going to make 115, 120 million of this thing, whether he plays football for the next 3 years or not. That's how strong this is, initially speaking. And like I said, over the next 5 years, there's about 220 million built into this. So it's as strong as a quarterback contract can get, Deshaun Watson notwithstanding. I like to make sure that gets said, but put aside. And outside of that, it's the strongest guaranteed contract in the history of the NFL.
So I wanted to bring up a point here because there seems to be a little bit of a confusion. When news broke, it was said that he's the highest paid player in NFL history. But actually, if you're looking at total value of the contract, Mahomes' deal is more, but Burrow is the highest paid per year. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so most of the media lives and dies by the average salary, right? Which is, in Joe Burrow's case, $55 million a year. It's far and above the highest average salary we have. It's a really hard metric to use in the NFL because of what I've been saying. Not every dollar is actual dollar. Not every dollar is guaranteed. A lot of contracts get ripped up halfway through for whatever reason, and it ends up not being $55 million a year. So it's a marketable number. It's something that agents like to hang their hat on because it does make him the highest ever in that regard. My problem with saying it in this regard is every other number Joe Burrow has is basically the highest number ever, except for that $310 million versus Patrick Mahomes' $480 million. So there's a lot of number ones in Joe Burrow's contract. But if we're talking total contract value, which you've referenced here, it is Patrick Mahomes' gigantic deal first and then Joe Burrow second.
So when you got the details of it, other than how you pointed out that this contract is so rock solid for the next 5 years in the guaranteed money, what else stood out to you that you thought was unique about this contract? And then I have a follow-up about what do you feel like, based off what you've seen, was the most important thing Burrow's representation wanted out of this contract?
Oh, good question. Okay, so with the first one, again, I'll go back to Cincinnati as a franchise. They haven't been cheap, right? They have handed out nice cashed contracts. Right? Andy Dalton got a $96 million contract forever ago. That's a nice, you know, chunk of change for a quarterback back in 2014. So I'm not saying they're frugal. Where they've been a little bit behind the eight ball is guaranteed money because, and this is a big deal in the NFL and it still exists, you know, years and years later, any guaranteed money at signing has to get put into an escrow account. So there's $100 million plus that the Cincinnati Bengals ownership now has to pump into an NFL bank account and put away so that Joe Burrow gets it no matter what. What surprised me is just how strong the first three seasons of cash are in this contract. If Cincinnati was going to win this battle a little bit, it was going to be there, and they didn't. Joe Burrow won this battle. So he is the second highest three-year cash flow in the history of football. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes is nowhere near this. His contract was backloaded. So
who's the first then?
Yeah, go ahead.
Who's the first then?
It's actually Lamar Jackson with this ridiculous holdout contract in Baltimore. Very different. And I noted in the article, Joe Burrow is a rookie extension. Lamar Jackson was a free agent. He went through all of his rookie years, got the franchise tag, held out from that, and then signed this massive front-loaded contract in Baltimore. So it's kind of apples and oranges, but the numbers, you know, stack up Lamar number one, Burrow number two. But if we're just talking about a player who's finished three seasons and bought out 2 years of rookie contract to get to this next deal, the second year, third year, and first year cash in Joe Burrow's contract are historical.
So then, so you say that the agent, Joe Burrow's agent, won in that what they were able to get in these next couple of years. How do you feel like they went into it saying that was what we really wanted? Why do you think that was so important to them?
It's a really nice question. The one bugaboo I have with this contract and a lot of the contracts that have been signed recently in the NFL is the length. So it sounds great to have a player under contract for 7 years, right? And the Bengals love it, right? But Joe Burrow knows, and Joe Burrow's agents know, that in 4 years, this salary cap is going to be near $300 million. Players are going to be making $70 to $75 million a year. It's just where we're headed. This is going to be basketball money sooner rather than later here. So you don't want to get stuck into a situation where by 3-4 years, you hate what you're living in. And Patrick Mahomes is already there. He's trying to get out of his current contract because of where things are around him right now. So for me, if I'm Joe Burrow's agent, and I think this is exactly how it went down, okay, we'll get under contract for 7 years to kind of make the Bengals happy here, but we're going to pump as much cash into the first three seasons as humanly possible. So I do believe that was the compromise. That was the trade-off. And then they're going to have to fight to get out of this thing 4 or 5 years into it when everybody's making $60, $70, $80 million around him.
Is the average per year number about what you expected, or did you think it was going to be potentially higher, lower? What did you think about the $55 million average per year that he's going to get?
It's exactly where I thought this was going. Even after we saw the contract for Justin Herbert and things like that, I knew it wasn't going to be just a little bit north. You just can't go to Super Bowls and have the kind of success he's had and then be the next man up by a little bit. You knew it had to be substantially higher in most regards. And like I said, and the article proves it, pretty much every single metric you want to talk about with this contract is substantially higher than any other quarterback contract in the league.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the injury settlements. I know there's sometimes a lot of questions from people. The first thing a lot of people have asked me is, what does his injury settlement look like? What did you find out about the injury settlements in when reviewing this contract?
In terms of when they can get out of this, like how much is he protected for it?
Yes.
Okay, it's a really good question. So all of that $219 million that we're talking about here is fully guaranteed for injury. So while $115 or so million is actually fully guaranteed, like I said, he can never play football again and he'll still get that. The 219 is protected for injury guarantee. So Cincinnati really put their necks out there with this contract. It's basically 5 years of injury guarantee for Joe Burrow out of the gate. And there's really no way around that outside of suspensions and some things like that. But it's a very, very, very strong, stable contract for the next five seasons.
And then were there other things? I'm going to pull up your article right now just to make sure we didn't miss anything. But was there any other things that you thought was unique that you wanted to touch on about it?
Yeah, I do. There's six bonuses in this contract. All right. So the Eagles are sort of like the kingpins of doing this, where they'll hand out bonuses, which essentially spreads the salary cap out more, right? It makes their job easier rather than having to finagle with things year in and year out. And generally they'll do three bonuses, a signing bonus, and then a couple of option bonuses year to year, just to make this thing work from a salary cap standpoint. Cincinnati built in six. Okay. That's unprecedented. And basically what they're saying is, we know how big this is. We don't want to have to deal with this every single year. You know, we can maneuver other contracts if we have to, but we're going to build this in so that we have options. We have ways to make the cap work for us right out of the gate. And we don't have to go back and forth with our quarterback from a cap standpoint and bother him to make the rest of our roster work. We're just going to make the contract work for us right now in that regard.
Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is, one of the biggest things that came out of this contract was, less than a day after the news came out, I reported on Cincinnati.com that the Bengals and T. Higgins are not, and we're not close to an extension this offseason. And if there was, it would have had to be shocking for it to have gotten done before Sunday. It didn't get done before Sunday, and there's going to be no negotiating going on during the season. And a lot of questions I got were, I thought that Joe Burrow had said he was going to be cognizant of the other players that needed to get paid. Based off what you know about the salary cap, this contract, what the Bengals could potentially have to pay with Ja'Marr Chase coming up next offseason, eligible for an extension, what did you make of that? Because I feel like there could be some stuff that gets cleared up here, because just because Burrow said that, he could have went to the Bengals and his representation and said, how do we make this work? We don't know. We're not privy to those conversations, but what did you think about the contract from that standpoint?
So if you'll note, and I know you read my article, at the very bottom of the article, I basically say, you know, Cincinnati's, their work's not done. And I outline Ja'Marr Chase as the next man up. I believe that's where their head is. I believe that they have moved on from T. Higgins from a contractual standpoint. Look, this guy can play his way into a lot of situations, but for all intents and purposes, he's a number one wide receiver. He knows it. He wants to be paid like it. There's not a world where Cincinnati can do that right now. You know, Tampa Bay did that with two of their wide receivers. It's very rare for teams to operate with two $20, $25 million wide receivers right now, especially if their quarterback is paid. And that's certainly what's happening here in Cincinnati. So the mindset has to be Ja'Marr Chase. You know, he's done so much now in his first two seasons and will again this year to prove that he needs his extension after year three. So Joe Burrow's contract is set up fine to handle Ja'Marr Chase's contract next offseason. Like I said, the six bonuses keep salary cap numbers fairly tenable for Cincinnati. But I just think in a world of T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, there's not really a team that's going to go down that route with essentially $100 million of average salary combined for three players is what you're talking about there.
Would it make sense to you? Because it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. But again, I'm not in the business of predicting for the Bengals to, a lot of people have asked, is this going to be similar to Jesse Bates' situation in the Bengals will tag him, he'll play on the tag, and then he'll move on and hit free agency. To me, it's a different situation because the tag is going to be higher for the wide receiver position, and you're going to be looking at upwards of $20 million at the wide receiver position for the tag number. So to pay that for one season, knowing that long term you're probably not going to get somewhere, doesn't make a ton of sense to me, because then also you lose the value in getting something in return for T, because the highest you'd get in a compensatory pick would be, you know,
third, right?
A third, fourth, or fifth round pick. And so an option to me seems likely that it could be a tag and trade situation. Or do you just think that the Bengals will not even tag him and trade him and just let him walk to free agency? Where do you see this headed, knowing what you know about the wide receiver market?
Yeah, the Jesse Bates stuff is really important, because there were some bad optics with that. That got a little bit ugly. You don't want that to settle into your front office, right? To have a bugaboo on you so that pending free agents and players you might want to bring in to replace the agents, if you have to, essentially say, no, I'm going to get a raw deal here if I get inside this front office. So you don't want the optics to start to trickle in a little bit here. With that said, I think tag and trade is the right approach here. T. Higgins is going to be the best weapon to hit the open market this offseason, and I don't think it's going to be close. So generally when that happens, you know, we saw it with Christian Kirk not too long ago, you know, leaving Arizona for Jacksonville. He probably got 25 to 30 million more total value than anybody thought he was even going to be considered for. T. Higgins is in this conversation. So if he's, I think he's a $22 million player in my system right now in terms of our evaluation. He's easily 25 on the open market. So he knows it. The Bengals probably know it. The Bengals know there's six or seven teams with rookie quarterbacks that probably want to bring him in to increase their situation. I think a tag and trade works if you can make the salary cap work, because you're right, it's going to be a high hit in March, and you have to be able to handle that immediately as you offer it.
So just a couple more questions for me. Can we talk about the difference in, a lot of people will bring up how Tom Brady handled business with his contracts and how he would always take less to keep those around him. You study these contracts all day. What did Tom Brady do with his contracts that maybe Joe Burrow didn't do? Or did they do things similar and it's just not highlighted because Tom Brady didn't have the high market wide receivers around him? So even if he did take less, it probably wouldn't have helped them, because it's just a different time in the NFL in terms of what receivers are making, and receivers weren't making that when Tom Brady was playing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Neither were edge defenders, neither were cornerbacks, right? Everybody's up. There are six or seven positions that are so far up that there's really no going back at this point. And there's six positions that are deflating because of it. What Tom Brady did that no real other player in this league has done outside of Darrelle Revis, believe it or not, is short and sweet. Two-year contracts, maximum three-year contracts throughout his career. He gets a brand new signing bonus every year and a half or so. So he's always cash heavy. And his salary cap hits stay low. He did this even in Tampa Bay when he moved. It's just two, three-year contracts to keep everybody happy and keep the cap salary cap moving and to keep him relevant with the salary cap. So, you know, if you're not going to be the highest paid player, you can be the eighth highest paid player, but you're still making more because everybody's making more in two, three seasons. So it's a really smart process if you trust yourself, if you trust your team, if you trust your franchise. But it's not said enough how many players didn't get contracts in New England because of what Tom Brady did, because he was constantly needing to be re-signed, because he was constantly handed out signing bonuses. You saw a lot of great offensive linemen, edge defenders, players like that, and certainly wide receivers not get contracts with New England because of what Tom Brady was doing. So it's a back and forth. It's a chicken and egg scenario, unfortunately, and every team has to do it their way, and nobody else has picked Tom Brady's way yet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's really important because people just want to make that comparison right away. But that's why I have an expert on to break things down like that. So I'm pulling up your article right now, and I just kind of want to go through it briefly before I let you go. Obviously, 5 years, $275 million extension with the Bengals. Burrow scores a $40 million pay raise this year and a whopping $146.5 million fully guaranteed at the signing with $111 million of new guarantee. So to put that into perspective, is that $146.5 million fully guaranteed in his bank account right now?
Nope. Only this year's stuff, right? So the signing bonus this year and the two paychecks he makes every week for the 36-week payout that the NFL gives him. So it's the Bengals give him his 2023 money. The rest of that 146 goes into that NFL escrow account. So it's not in the Bengals' hand anymore, right? They've lost it. But Burrow will get it when it's actually allocated to him. He doesn't get handed it all up front.
So when you're looking at the year over year of what he's getting per year, it's important to look at the signing bonus and what else? The base salary?
Yeah, so we have, when we break down the contracts on our site, we have a yearly cash column next to all the salary cap jargon, right? That's what you're looking for. You're looking for the yearly breakdown of cash. And it's great. I think he's got $65 million in year two. The numbers are just gigantic up front. So like I said, I can't say that enough about the strength of the earliness of this contract, whereas Patrick Mahomes, just for reference, made $60 million over the first 3 years of his contract. That's how different Mahomes versus Burrow is here.
So, yeah, and to pull it up, and again, I highly encourage anyone who's interested in this to really check out your article because it's fantastic and it's really easy to read. And so I'm looking at the yearly cash column right now. We're at $45 million this year. And then, as you said, 65 next season, then it goes down to 35 for the following two seasons. And then it really doesn't balloon up again into the 50s until 2029. But based off our conversation, it sounds like you think they'll have already renegotiated that contract by then. So that could be a completely different number.
Yeah, that's the fluffy number in this, right? The final year is usually the fluff built into the NFL contract. And either something has gone terribly wrong or something has gone terribly right and he's in a brand new contract by then for sure.
So just one more from me. What part of this did you like the most from the Bengals? What did you feel like they did well in negotiating this contract?
They broke all their standards, right? We saw Pittsburgh do this last year or 2 years ago with TJ Watt. They broke every single standard, including what they had done with Ben Roethlisberger to get TJ Watt under contract in a modern style contract. That's what this is. It's a modern contract. It's traditional. And they did everything possible to make sure that Joe Burrow was happy. So we can say that he gave a little bit to make sure Ja'Marr Chase gets in the fold next year. He didn't give much. So the Bengals really, they loosened their chains and they said, we have to do what everybody else is doing. And that is not something they've done before.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out because I feel like, the Bengals have been scrutinized for, as you mentioned at the top of this, sometimes how they handle contracts. But this one, they know the importance of Joe Burrow and what he's done, not just for the team, but for the city of Cincinnati from a revenue standpoint. I mean, when I got here 2 years ago, season tickets are pretty easy to get, and now they're on a waiting list, and every game is sold out. So they're making, a lot more money on game days and just around the city. So it sounds like the Bengals knew from the start. And Katie Blackburn at owners' meetings, told me, she said, it's going to be whatever Joe wants. So I don't think that there was ever a point that this was, I wasn't inside the negotiations, of course. So this is just me saying, but it didn't sound like this ever got to the point where two sides really couldn't agree. I think it seemed like it was a pretty fair negotiation.
Yeah, he had all the leverage. He's done so much already for that city, for that franchise, outside of winning the whole thing. So there was really a slam dunk for what he wanted. And it's really just like you mentioned, what are the agents pushing for most here? And I think everybody won in this one.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. Well, I will let you go. I know you're a very busy man, and I will tweet out the link to your story, of course, when this podcast is out. But if you are not on social media and you want to check it out, it's www.spotrac.com, and you will see the article there, and it breaks everything down. So, Mike, thanks so much for coming on. I hope that I can bring you on at another time because you're just great and really nailed the details of this and really broke it down in a way that I think a lot of our listeners can better understand. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Kelsey.
Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode. I'll talk to you guys next week.